Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Semperman, with my co-host,
Tim Oshai.
Tim, great to be back in studio with you.
I've missed you, John.
Oh, I'm sure you
too much Zoom.
Well, we actually have a great guest on Zoom today, though.
I'll take her on Zoom. Chantel Preston, who is the author of The Success Lie, okay, a great new book. And she's also the owner of Signal San Francisco, a new pro volleyball team.
You know, and regarding pro volleyball, this is women's pro volleyball. I've been seeing more and more of this in arenas across the country. So I was somewhat aware of professional volleyball, but obviously our conversation with Chantel will shed a lot more light on where that sport is.
And I mean, from a sports business perspective, you know, with Chantel, who is a great business person, what she is seeing is that volleyball has a great and largely untapped, you know, opportunity here for entrepreneurs to come in and do something with the sport. So excited to see where they head with it, but it's a great conversation with Chantel.
Yeah, and I also think it goes a little deeper than volleyball, because there are some things we're going to touch on, life lessons, you know, the importance of sport as we talk to, you know, and talk a lot about kind of building values.
This is going to get into, if anything ever does, any conversation ever does, how the business of sports connects with business on the whole.
Right. With that, why don't we get to our guest, Chantel Preston, not only talk about life lessons from sport, but also her investment primarily in women's sport.
Chantel Preston, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. First, let's talk about the book, The Success Lie. Tell us a little bit about it and how's it been going?
So The Success Lie was really written around my career and my pathway. You know, where we think we're going to end up in life and where we end up are usually two totally different places. And as a kid growing up, I thought success revolved all around money and title. And so when I got there, I thought, this is it. I finally have it all. And my world kind of fell apart. And so it's really talking through the lies I was told as a child. Like, you can have it all, the white picket fence, the perfect parents, the perfect family, the perfect kids. And then we get there and we have a certain expectation, and it doesn't always meet our expectations. So it's talking through, how do we reframe, instead of you can have it all, but you can have it all, but not at the same time. Or my favorite is, you have to say yes to everything. As women, we're pretty in tune of just saying yes to try to please everyone around us. But when we say yes to something, we're saying no to something else that may help us achieve our goals. So it's really a book around giving women permission to rewrite the rules, because we didn't create the rules. Why are we living by rules that we didn't create? So it's just a really good opportunity for women to just realize that they're not alone, and not necessarily say the lies are lies, but how do we reframe them to really fit into our own world?
And Chantel, John Semperman here. You know, for our viewers and listeners, you were not always an author. Give us a little bit of your background and your career path, which I think will help frame where we may end up going with the conversation.
Sure. So I didn't really expect to go into the healthcare sector, but straight out of college, I went into the healthcare industry. My forte is actually building healthcare facilities, whether it's full acute care, 300-bed hospitals, all the way to radiation oncology facilities. So throughout my career, I started putting together companies, and my main business was called Mentis Neurorehabilitation, and it was traumatic brain injury rehab. And so we built it from, we really didn't know what it was, concept, all the way to, we exited to private equity in 2015. And that, John, was a real pivotal time of my life of, you know, you finally have it all. I've been working 20 years to get there. And then when I got there, it was just nothing like I expected. And it was a really hard time. I realized that my identity was so tied up in my career. And I had a 5-year-old at home, and I didn't know what she ate for breakfast. And so it was a real pivotal time of taking a step back and saying, wait, what does success really mean to me? And does this still fulfill me like it used to? And so from the last 10 years, it's been down a journey of, what's next? You know, what's phase two? I didn't really want to go back into the, you know, running big companies. So it's been around, how can I help elevate and empower other women? The one thing that I realized when we sold our business was, where are all the women? I mean, it was all men in the room, but I thought that was normal because my business partner was a male. And having 3 daughters, it was kind of like, I needed to rethink of how I wanted to view things and what I wanted to give back. I am the managing partner for a VC firm called The Collective in Houston. We do sports and health tech funding, as well as I am one of the lead partners for an active aging and longevity 1 and 2 funds. So being able to invest in the things that I wanted to see in the world, but also teach other women how to build their own wealth. And so that kind of brings us to today. And so you ask, and now I am one of the owners and founders of the new League One Volleyball San Francisco Signal. And we're an expansion team with League One Volleyball.
Well, this leads to my question. You jump from healthcare to professional sports, right? What skills are transferable in that leadership role? And I guess really, why sports? What drove you to invest in professional sports?
Look, I think sports teaches everyone, especially kids, very important skill sets that they can utilize in the boardroom, on the field, wherever it is. I love sports. My daughters play sports. And frankly, it was a great opportunity valuation-wise. You know, look, I'm not about, you know, it either has to be impact or returns. It should be both. And so I went down a path of saying, I love sports. I love what they do. And NIL had come out. And I was really worried about who's giving these kids good counsel. Because as you know, you make more money, people come out of the woodwork, they start wanting to help you, but they don't really know enough. So I started speaking to high school athletes and collegiate athletes. I'm not a broker, I have nothing to sell, but just as a parent of wanting them to have good counsel and knowing what questions to ask. And that just kind of started this snowball. And then I realized, wait, I'm really enjoying this, meeting the people I met. So I went down a 3-year journey of where do I want to invest my money? And I looked at a lot of different leagues and settled on volleyball at the end of the day. So multiple reasons why. And again, I want women to realize, you asked about transferable skill sets. You know, I hate it when an athlete says, I'm just an athlete. Now, let me tell you what you are as a CEO. You're disciplined, you're resilient, you know how to lose and get back up, you're committed. So I want them to understand there's a transition that if you choose to stop that playing career, there's an opportunity for you in the boardroom. And so that's where my passion comes in.
There's a couple of points here, Chantel, I want to pause on. The first one is some of those NIL conversations you were having. You know, it sounds like just out of the goodness of your heart and out of concern. What were some of the highlights or the bullet points of the advice you were giving young athletes and their families on how to navigate this?
Some of these athletes and families, they don't know what questions, they don't know what they don't know. Let me just say that. And that's a lot of women, period. We weren't taught how to create wealth. We weren't taught what different asset classes are, how to manage our money. It's kind of like we did budgets, we didn't look at how do we project for financial wealth. So it was really breaking it down on a 101, almost like investing 101, to make them understand what questions to ask. Because as you very well know, people come to you with these great ideas. Most people don't want to look stupid and ask the dumb questions. So if they don't have the fundamentals of being able to know what a different asset class, what does it mean for compounding? What does it mean to save versus spend? How can that compound over time? It was simply really just the basics. So they would, when they met with folks, they had some questions that they could ask and they felt like they were more empowered to make good decisions.
We're here with Chantel Preston, author of The Success Lie. I want to pause here on another point too. You know, you're talking about the qualities that a CEO has. Mm-hmm. And as you got there, it's the exact same qualities a great coach and a great athlete has. So take us deeper into that. What connections do you see there between what an athlete develops and how they can carry that beyond the, you know, the ice, the court, the field?
Sure. You look at the basic, you know, mental resilience for athletes. You know, there's a difference between being a champion and being an elite champion, you know, and it's usually the mindset. It's not necessarily the skill set. So if they're learning that on the court, they can bring that. Emotional intelligence is huge for me. If you know how to act and interact with others and you're able to regulate and control your own emotions and situations, to me, that's better than any skill set that you can have. They're learning how to do that, but also how to, you know, reset. There's situations we've all been in where we've had to check ourselves to reset in a meeting, in a boardroom. And being able to do that as an athlete, again, to me, are invaluable skills in the boardroom or in whatever career you decide to go down. So I think there's that confidence. I also own a dance studio in Houston, and I love this with the smaller kids because you see these girls coming in from ages 6 to 12, and that's such a very vulnerable time of their lives. They never look up. They're not confident. Now you see them shoulders back, that confidence. That's what we want to build. And the statistics, you know, of how many women in C-level positions played sports is astronomical. Well, there's a reason for that. And so if we can continue to drive that home and keep girls in sports, it's just going to help us at the end of the day.
Yeah. You know, Chantel, you've nailed two big topics on our program. You know, we've We believe it or not, on Skin in the Game, we have talked about professional dance, was a full episode we had. And we spent a lot of time, especially talking to the leadership of the Aspen Institute and Project Play, on how important it is to get these kids, you know, on the pitch or on the court. And, you know, the goal doesn't need to be you're going to play professionally, but the goal to start is learn those life skills.
I tell my parents all the time, if you're looking for the $500 dress for the recital for grandma and grandpa, we're probably not your place. But if you're looking at great technical skills in a positive environment where you're also going to enable them to learn life skills like confidence, collaboration, we're going to compete against each other, but yet still support each other. That's what we're building. And that's what we need to continue to build so they stay in sports and they have that safe space.
Let's switch over to the investor side here for a little bit, Chantel. Talk us through the investment potential of women's sports. I mean, it seems to be going on a trajectory that's like skyrocketing upward, but it's obviously it's more nuanced than that. And it sounds like you took some time to figure out where you wanted to put your money before deciding on volleyball. So, you know, take us through that.
I did. You know, there's a lot out there. Let's just all agree that there's a lot of emerging leagues coming out, a lot of teams. And so I took my time. You know, I think everybody thinks sports is just always so glamorous and everything else, but really it's a business. And so I evaluated it like every other investment I look at. You know, what's the business model? How are they going to make money? All those types of things. I looked at USL, NWSL, rugby, AUSL, so many different leagues, and all had their pros, some cons. But what I saw was a lot of the men's got the women's licenses. And so they were going to run it like the men's team. Look, I think it's very different. The clientele base, you know, how the energy, it's just a different type of client or fan with the women's versus the men. And so when I found volleyball, and guys, I'll be honest, I don't know much about volleyball. I never played volleyball. My experience in volleyball is sixth grade volleyball. Oh my God, you just hope they get it over the net. Okay. But when I went to the games, they were so energetic. They were such a team. They come together between every point. It's a true team sport, but the energy, and I have to tell you, the demographics, I thought it was going to be all young kids. It wasn't. And so I was really fascinated by the demographics of volleyball. And so as I continued to learn more about volleyball, as well as League One, I realized that they pretty much hold the same values that I did. And that was a place that I felt like I could really be successful.
Tell us a little bit more about League One volleyball, because I guess for our listeners, you know, there may not be a team now in Buffalo or in Toronto or in my hometown of Cleveland yet. What's the landscape? Tell us about the leagues, where the teams are, who they're playing.
Sure. You've got two leagues out there. You have League One volleyball, and then you have a Major League volleyball. So unfortunately, there's two leagues right now. I hope at some point in my lifetime, they come together as one. But League One, it's really fascinating because they have the youth to pro ecosystem. And that was one of the things I respected a lot, is instead of just running out and putting together a professional league, they established it by the community and the youth side. So they built the clientele base before they went out and did the teens or the professionals in 2025. So it was a little bit different mindset. They do own some of the ecosystem on the youth side. So it's kind of like, if you see it, you believe it, you can be it. And that was kind of the mindset behind that. So the fact that they spent so much time building the infrastructure and making sure the infrastructure was solid before they did the professional, I really respected a lot. The first two seasons, we had six teams. And now going into season three, we'll have 10 teams. So in San Francisco, Signal is one of those expansion teams. We play in different markets, Houston, Austin, Atlanta. You're going to quiz me here on all this, aren't you? Nebraska, Madison, Salt Lake City. And then we have Los Angeles, San Francisco, Minnesota, and one more. Oh, Miami.
I've been reading a lot about the league the last few weeks. And I guess there's, is it the Omaha Supernovas? They have, I guess they've had some success on the court.
They have, and that's Major League Volleyball. And, no. You know, it goes back to the two different leagues. They do incredibly well. I mean, it's interesting because people don't realize that volleyball is the number one girls sport in the U.S. And I think that's fascinating. I never realized that until I started doing my due diligence. And it amazed me because you don't think of it as volleyball. But the other thing I loved is there's no male counterpart. So it's not like we're battling with the men, because there's not a men's league at this point in time. yet. I'll say that yet. I'm sure it's coming. But that gives us the opportunity to create something different. And instead of following what people always did, how do we create something a little bit different? And frankly, that's what we did in San Francisco.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like the kind of the Premier League model, right? Where they're developing the youth, grassroots focus. And then that, you know, that's the foundation you built from. Super smart.
You know, we're in one of the top three leagues in the world. There's Turkey and Italy and then us. And to your point, you know, a lot of the players were leaving to go international because they didn't have options here in the U.S. Our goal is to keep them here in our own backyard, but also bring in some of the talent internationally so we can continue to build that, you know, that momentum that we have, especially, you know, we got 2028 coming up and volleyball is one of the most watched sports in the Olympics. And so, again, how do we utilize those tailwinds and continue to drive us forward, which is what we're doing?
Chantel, listening to you describe the not only your decision to invest in the team and the league, but, you know, how it's differentiated in the market, it has me thinking about the parallels between investing in sports versus investing across the board. And tell me if I'm onto something here, because what I'm hearing you say is, yeah, volleyball may not be what people consider to be like a top of mind pro sport yet, as we sit here today. But look at the participation numbers, especially for women, and you've got something that's, I don't want to say it's a niche sport because it's absolutely not, but it's an untapped sport that Maybe at the pro level might seem to be niche now, but won't stay there. In the business world outside of sports, finding that niche business that's filling a real need that has an audience that's ready to explode is exactly what an entrepreneur wants to do.
Well, absolutely. And if you look, the audience is already there. The infrastructure is now catching up. And that's what I think was so important for me is, you know, again, like any other business, you're going to look up, where's my return on investment? Now, we all know investing in sports is a longer game. You have to be patient. It's not something that's going to be, I think some of my folks have said this is the worst investment you could ever make because, again, it's not something that's going to be cash liquid quickly. But then you look at the ancillary around it. So there is a lot of opportunity, but you have to have patience with sports, especially with emerging leagues. Look at the valuations of what's happened, you know, WNBA, we were talking about earlier, you know, the valuations have gone through the roof. So it's different investing at that level that's already established versus an emerging where you can get in on a little bit less and hope that you get there. And I think that that was really some of my decision-making was how can I, again, get the best return on my investment, but also enjoying what I'm doing with people that obviously have the same values. That was kind of my determining factor as to where to write my own checks.
Chantel, we're not looking for investment advice, but if Tim and I had some disposable income and we were looking at quote unquote emerging leagues, you know, what rocks should we be looking under? Obviously, League One volleyball, but are there other leagues that you see still as emerging and opportunities?
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, this isn't my only investment in sports. I mean, you look at European soccer. I'm going to call it soccer because I'm still not used to the football term. European soccer. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities out there. It goes back to you have to have a solid league. And that's where my differential is. I didn't like with some leagues, each individual team was only concerned about themselves. Whereas if you have a league where everybody's invested in the league, now all of a sudden everybody's goals and objectives are aligned, meaning as the tide rides, we all win. So it's everyone's not fighting against each other. They're fighting together. And I think that was important. And that's how it is with love, because we're all doing what's best for the league as a whole and making sure that each one of us collaborating together, you know, helping each other. It's just a great environment. And that's what we want, because at the end of the day, we're only as good as our league. It's just a little bit different mindset. And if you look at some of the European soccer, there are a lot of men's clubs that have women teams that don't really know what to do with them. You know, our group, Crux Football, is able to pick those teams up, use some synergies, and dissipate kind of the expenses across multiple teams. There's just a lot of opportunity right now, which also scares me at the same time, because will they all be sustainable at the end of the day? I don't know. But make sure you're looking at the investment from the same lens you would look at any other business of who's the leaders, how are we going to get there, what's their business model, and what's the objective, and what is your objective at the end of the day?
We're here with Chantel Preston, author of The Success Lie. You write in the book, Chantel, about 9 lies that people hear, and specifically women hear about success. I don't know if you want to sit here and list all nine. People should go buy the book and read it. It's great. But give us at least a little sneak preview for people who haven't cracked open the book yet.
Well, I think the biggest one I hear from most women is you have to say yes to everything. You know, we feel like we have to carry the load. We have to say yes. And we're juggling so many things at one time. And then if we say no, we feel guilty. Well, I had to reframe it. I'm the first one on, you know, Room Mom. Who wants to be Room Mom? I'm raising my hand. I'm like, why did I do that? I don't really want to be Room Mom. But I thought it made me a better parent, right? Because my kid's like, why aren't you doing it? And so I think it's really resetting your mind. Of me saying yes means I'm saying no to something else. And when I say no to something else, I'm giving someone else an opportunity to say yes. Someone that probably really wants to do that. So that takes that guilt off of me. And then my other favorite one, which I didn't realize till I was older, you know, I always thought you had to pick between your career and family. You couldn't have both functioning at the same time. And hence I was 37 before I had my daughter. Well, I realized there's no such thing as balance. Balance doesn't exist. What exists is integration. How can I integrate the two together and be very intentional with my time? Full disclosure, I'm not a parent that thinks quantity is a good thing. I think quality time is a great thing with my kids and being emotionally present when I'm there and them also understanding what's important to me. And just a quick story, I got inducted into the Hall of Fame here in Houston and I came off the stage and my 15-year-old was crying and I thought, oh gosh, what happened? You know, something triggered her. She gave me a hug and she said, Mom, I've never been more proud to be your daughter. And I realized at that point in time, all the things I might have missed throughout the years, what she saw was a role model and someone that was following their dreams and passions, but yet still being there for her as a parent. And so I think sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit because we are trying to juggle everything. And so it's really about taking a step back and saying, what's success mean to me right now in the season I'm in?
Chantel, how would you talk parents through the sense of guilt that, you know, I know many people feel, probably every parent feels, and I dare say maybe more so moms in my, you know, and I say this as a dad, but in my experience and thinking of my wife, where she's sitting here with me, she would agree with this. You know, the feelings of guilt, if you're missing something or if you feel like you can't make every game, every dance recital. But then, you know, there's those stories of like your 15-year-old seeing the results of your work, right? So just from your own experience, how did you think through that?
Oh, gosh, Tim, I dealt with that big time. You know, especially after selling my business, my kids were used to me being home. And then when I started traveling again with my book and the volleyball team, they're like, why are you having to do this? And I set them down and I wanted them to understand being a parent to me is incredibly important, but it's not my only identity. And I really love to give back. And I didn't give my kids enough credit because when I set them down and explained to them why it was so important to me, now it's like, bye, Mom, see you later. You're going to help somebody else. And I think that's important because, you know, I don't want them to dislike work when they get to my age, because I've never worked a day in my life. I've loved everything I've ever done. Now, was there sacrifices that I probably could have balanced a little bit better? Yes. But I want them to understand that, hey, you can follow your passion and your purpose in life and yet still have a really great relationship. It's about transparency. It's about being direct. And I also let my kids see my emotion. Like, I have bad days like everybody else. I want them to understand it's okay to have a bad day. Because what I'm showing them is that when they get to that point, they don't expect it to be all rainbows and unicorns, because it's not. But if it's something that's important to you, it's important for you to work hard to get it. And that's what I've instilled with my kids. I can't say they're always happy, but it's definitely toned it down. And so it's just about being very intentional with my time. So basically, Tim, I haven't figured it all out yet. Okay, so let's just say that, but I'm working on it. Okay, and it seems to be working so far.
You know, I think, Chantel, about people who work in sports, and I would include anyone from sports executives, which John was for a long time. And John, when your kids were little, right?
Yep, but yeah. I made sure that, at least in my world, Chantel, you know, my kids were also, when appropriate, you know, they would spend time at the games with me. There were sacrifices, and, you know, I give my wife the most credit because we also moved three times for three separate teams, but, you know, wouldn't replace it for anything. The kids were at our sides and have some unbelievable memories of those years.
I think we put too much pressure on ourselves sometimes about it with our kids. Like, my kids, same thing. I take them to on business trips with me, but that's special time too that I get with them. And then they get to see it, and then they believe they can be anything. And that's what I want to instill in my kids.
Now, Chantel, I do need to give you a little warning as someone who was very vested in his career in professional sports. Unfortunately, my identity became tied to the team I worked for. So, you know, when the Philadelphia 76ers go 9-83, that's my identity, right? There is a little bit, because you're so, when you work in sports, you know, unfortunately, I can't put the ball in the net, or I can't do the spike on the volleyball, but your identity will be a little tied to the success of the Signals.
Well, you say that, John, but I'll counter that, because when I coached softball for 10 years, my success was really around how many kids hugged me when I'd walk across the field.
That's right. Right.
Right. Yeah. So what does success mean? Now, are we going to win? Of course we're going to win, John. We'll just pack that over here for right now. Of course we're going to win. But if we don't, if we have an off season, you know, again, that's where it goes back to, how do we build that culture where if we're not winning, they still want to be there. And to your point, been there, done that about the identity crisis. I won't do that again, but I'm definitely going to be heavily involved and excited for every game to come through. So, well, yes.
I'm glad you brought up the culture word, because we've had many team executives, front office executives, and Tim, you and I have our theory. And, you know, there's one theory that winning builds a culture. I really think, and Tim, a great culture builds winning. Because Chantel, just what you said, you know, you can battle the highs. You can never get too high. You can never get too low. And if you look at every successful professional sports franchise, men and women, and you look at the top, the culture they create has created that environment to win.
I mean, again, in the healthcare sector, I ran my hospitals during COVID. I mean, you have to build a culture where people want to stay and want to be and feel a part of. And sports is no different. I think that that was the biggest thing that I didn't realize. I thought it was all going to be, you know, fun, but it is building a business around the culture that you want to create. And at the end of the day, I had somebody say this to me when I first started coaching my 4-year-old at softball. It's like, girls have to have fun to win and boys have to win to have fun. And I tell you, at the time, I thought that was a sexist thing and I was really mad about it. And I went home and was angry. And I realized it was very true, because we always won in softball. And the reason we did is because the kids didn't even realize they were learning, because they were enjoying it. Again, it depends on what kind of culture you want to create. And there's a way of doing it in a manner where everyone is just happy to be there. And I'm not saying it happens all the time, but if we can create that for not just the folks on the court, but all of our staff, then we're winning no matter what.
Right on. And then everybody's lifting everyone up.
That's right. Right. Everyone's important whether you're on the court, whether you're in the back of the house, everyone's a key component to the team. And we need to make sure that the team jives together and understands what our goals and objectives are and how we can get there and support each other.
Well, to me, the most important person working around a sporting event is the ticket taker. That's that first impression, the director of first impression, right? And they're just as important to the player that scores an overtime goal. Everybody is part of that team.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you said that, John, because a lot of people don't realize that. They think it's all about what's happening on the court. No, to me, it's what's happening around it is most important, because to your point, that's the first person somebody sees when they walk in. You know, and everybody's like, well, what are you going to do on game day? I'm going to shake everyone's hand that comes through the door. Why? Because I'm excited to be there and we want that energy. And so it is about what kind of culture, what kind of environment do we want? And that's the kind of environment that we've really set out to be in San Francisco.
We're here with Chantel Preston. Chantel, I'm gonna throw a big question at you here, because you really, really got me thinking there too when you talked about it. Maybe help me make sure I have this right. Boys need to win to have fun. Girls need to have fun to win.
Yes.
And I totally can see that. And I have two daughters and have coached, you know, all women's flag football, mm-hmm. taught in an all-girls school for a long time. So you're hitting a point I've thought a lot about. Here's my question for you. You know, obviously there's some, I guess I'll call them gender norms. And I'm wondering though, because you've been in a position to see this, are there some in and out of sports that you see changing over the years?
Ooh, great question. Yes and no. I would say, as a female, I'm just going to speak from my lens. I think we still have a long way to go. But I do think the old adage of we're going to teach boys to be CEOs and girls to be housewives has changed. And now it's like, how do we teach everyone to be great leaders? I think that's probably one of my favorite things about sports. There isn't that you're going to be this and I'm going to be this. It's just we're all going to be a team and work together. And in my household, the rule is you have to play one team sport. And that's because one of my daughter sometimes thinks she's the center of the universe. She needs to understand it's important to learn how to play with everybody else as a young child. And so I think there's still a lot of gender norms out there, but I do think it's transitioning. I just wish it was transitioning a little bit quicker than what it is. But there's enough of us out there screaming, and hopefully that we'll start changing the narrative. And so, you know, in 5 years, we'll have this conversation. It'll be a very different conversation.
What role would you like to see men play?
You know, we always talk about, like, I think men can be the greatest advocates. You know, it's not just all women, and there's a lot of women that are, you know, don't want men to help. I think men can be the greatest advocates, and they are. And I tell a lot of folks, because my partners are all male, sometimes they just don't know how to help. And so it's almost like that education piece of how can you help your female employees be their best at work? And again, our minds just work very differently, and they think differently. And so it's about, how can you raise your boys to be acceptable to the fact that girls can be just like them in regards to, you know, their intelligence, their sports abilities, things such as that? I think men can really step up. You know, my biggest thing on how men can help is invest in women. You know, we get, you know, 2% of investment. And, you know, people say, why did you do this, the volleyball team? Well, also, I'm tired of people standing in the corners going, great job. No, put your money where your mouth is, right? Because we're not going to get to where we want to be unless we're building our own wealth and we're able to do the same thing. So we need access. And so when I look at my male counterparts, to me, that's the biggest way you could help.
John, you mind if I jump in with one more here?
Jim, you're on a roll.
This is great. Come on, guys.
Sorry, I don't mean to dominate.
Yes.
Chantel, obviously, we're talking about society very broadly here, right? Society as a whole. What role do you think, and what role would you like to see sports play in helping make that shift? Because I'm sitting here thinking about the WNBA, the PWHL, and I could keep going here. The NWSL, you know, those are three sports: hockey, basketball, soccer, immediately flag football too, that come to mind here. Like, women's sports are absolutely dominating right now, even with troubles. Like, you know, the WNBA is having some trouble right now, but those, you know, those players are fantastic. People are, which is not a surprise. We've known that a long time, but people are watching now and they care, right? And there's investment and we're excited about it. But yeah, what role do you think that can all play in helping push the shift along faster?
I think if you look at, and I'm just going to go to the Caitlin Clark situation, yeah. You look at now, you see little boys with Caitlin Clark jerseys on. Yeah. It's not male or female, to your point, it's sports. So how do we give respect to both sides? How do we get the same media play that the male sports get? There's just a lot of things that are happening that I hope continue in that pathway. Brand deals. It's fascinating to me as I've learned this industry, how much women make 80% of the decisions in the household. However, brands spend all the money on men's sports, not women's sports. It's a really fascinating dynamic of what's happening. So I'm hoping I'm answering your question, but I do think that, you know, look, I always say, like, the WNBA, everything is like almost like a startup, you know, drama sells. Okay. Let's just say that. And it is entertainment. But what I've seen behind the scenes is these players have an immense respect for each other. And they want to continue to support each other, brand deals, you know, anything they can possibly do. The storytelling is what's making the big difference. Women want to hear the backstory. We want to know where they came from. And now I'm seeing the NFL doing that with, you know, some of their programs about take the helmet off. We want you to learn who these individuals are as humans, not just football players. And so I think as we continue to do that, we normalize and, you know, these as individuals and people, not just sports. And I think that that's going to help us at the end of the day.
Chantel, you did bring up the WNBA, and that is, you know.
Tim did, by the way, just so you know, John, Tim did, but go ahead. Yes.
Well, I really want your opinion. So first of all, I'm wearing my marketing PR guy hat. You know, our proverb was always, any PR is good PR, right? And you hit on it because, you know, there is some drama, there is some storytelling, but is it going a little bit too far right now? What's, you're closer to it than we are.
You know, I think it depends on who you ask and who you talk to. I think you can turn it, you know, it's kind of like in healthcare, you can ask a question to five doctors and get 10 different answers, right? So it just depends on who you're speaking to. I do think that we probably need to rein it in just a little bit, you know, and stay focused on the sport and the individuals in the sport and make sure that we're treating everyone with respect at the end of the day. But again, with anything, somebody's going to try to poke a hole as to blowing something up probably more than it needs to be. I think stay focused on the positive of what's happening in women's sports and the fandom that's been created, you know, the economics. I mean, we look at what's happening. I mean, I went to the NCAA championship. I mean, it's phenomenal to see entire stadiums full every time. And I hope that we stay on that versus, you know, isolated situations that happen, you know, off or on the court and focusing on that. Let's focus on the big picture.
I agree 100%. And I think we'll get there. And I just, you know, focus on the positives, the eyeballs, the full arenas. There's so many good things to talk about. And unfortunately, people like to focus on the negatives every now and then, right?
Always one in the group, John, always one. And so it's like, how do we go back to the positives of showing, look where we've come and look where we're headed. And you look at that by some of the new teams. I mean, it's super exciting where we are. Let's stay with the excitement side of things. Let's, you know, again, be respectful on all sides, but let's figure out how we continue this momentum moving forward.
Chantel, I'm gonna jump back over to the book here. You know, I know the Success Lie is not a sports book per se. It's exactly what the title says. It's a success book. It's a business book and stories and what you learned in business. But that doesn't mean there's no sports in it, of course. You know, as this conversation, you know, is I think so well articulated. There's so much people learn from sports that they can bring into business. And there's one that jumped out to me, and it's the win strategy from the mental performance coach, Brian Kane. And, you know, win, of course, stands for what's important now. Tell us about how you took a sports psychology tool and began applying it to business.
So I, you know, coaching my daughters for 10 years, I got certified through Brian's program of mental resilience for athletes because I wanted to know how to talk to the kids and be productive in my conversations with them. And I love the win strategy because it is about what's important right now. And sometimes we get so tied up in 5 years, 10 years. What about now? And I think we've all learned over the last 5 years that things can change very quickly beyond our control. And so now I look at it as 3 months, 6 months. Why? Because things can happen. And so instead of looking so far of the outcome, let's enjoy the journey. Let's focus on the journey. And he talks a lot about that in his program. Focus on the journey, not the outcome. The outcome, it will be what it is, but the journey is where you're going to learn the most. And that was really pivotal for me, not just on the sports sector, but on the business sector as well, because everything he talks about really goes right back and correlates with the business aspect.
As you were planning this book too, I mean, you've got a long and varied career to draw from. And this is my admitted like writer question. John and I laugh because, you know, I'm an author. So when there's an author on the show, I've got to sneak in a writer question. Mine for you is, how the heck did you decide what to share? Like you had a lot of material to narrow down there.
I take people's time very seriously, right? If you're going to take time out of your day to read something or watch my podcast or whatever, I want to make sure that it's valuable for you and there's actionable steps that you can take. But I also feel like it's my responsibility to be very open and vulnerable at the same time of the things I've gone through. I have to tell you, it was like therapy on Supercharge, going through and having to think back of the things that really molded me as a person and who I was originally versus who I am now. And I'm not going to tell you it was an easy path. My mother unexpectedly passed away 2.5 years ago. And that was the aha moment for me of time is precious. And she always said, hey, kid, go tell your story. Nobody wants to hear my story. Well, it's fascinating because now I see how it does resonate with other women because we just don't have these conversations. And so it's really about normalizing the hard conversations and knowing you're not alone. You know, we talked about it has to be lonely at the top. Well, why? Why does it have to be lonely? Why can't we support each other? And that goes back to the WNBA a little bit. Hey, guys, let's quit worrying about who's getting the credit. Let's worry about how we lift us all. And that type of mindset, but also with my generation, is when we were 20, we thought 50 would be dead, right? It's like, oh my God, that's so old. Well, now I'm 52. I'm like, I'm just getting started. And so it's also about that quit thinking of thing as a finality of what else can I do and what do I want to be doing? And so picking and choosing what I thought would really resonate with a reader. I had someone tell me today, they're like, I felt like I was talking to you because it was like, you were only talking to me. That's what I wanted to give them, was really an open and honest view of my life and the things I've gone through.
Chantel Preston, the book is The Success Lie. Where can people find it? Where can people find you?
Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold, you can find the book. And then I have my own website, which is ChantelPreston.com. I also have a podcast as well, Get Real, Get Results, mainly around some of these topics, and just a quick brief pump you up for the day kind of podcast. But those are the best ways. And then obviously social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all those things.
Well, Chantel, it's been a real pleasure. And I, you know, hope everybody out there goes and gets a copy or buys the ebook or the audiobook, right, of The Success Lie. It's a great read. It's a valuable read. And I dare say men should read it too. You know, I think there's a lot that everybody can learn from it. And it's been a real pleasure talking to you. And good luck to The Signal this year. I know you start.
Come on out, guys. We're going to have
start
some
in January.
Fun.
Yeah.
You let me know when you're ready to come on out. But thank you guys so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you.
Tim, great conversation. A lot deeper on the life skills than we normally go. But that was, you know, that was great. More importantly, it was great to talk about the League One volleyball, the growth and potential of that league, as well as, you know, women's sports in general.
It was really interesting to me, John, that, you know, volleyball has the, I know it had a lot of participation. I didn't realize it was the number one girls sport.
Yeah, my daughter played volleyball and loved it and continued on to play a little bit, you know, in club in college. I knew it was popular, but I just assumed soccer was more participation. But I guess when you think about it, every school, every gym, you know, every community, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, and you can play it, you know, if you're playing it at the competitive club level, or I should say travel team, you can play it year round too. So yeah, when you sit and think about it, right, it does make sense. It's not geographically driven, right? You can play it in... here in the Northeast, you can play it on the West Coast. And so it makes sense. And therefore, it absolutely, you can see where it would make sense to invest, you know, in the game at this stage in, you know, in the development of a pro league. So it's exciting to see. It'll be exciting to watch. And but yeah, that was very enlightening, right? Just to hear her thought process on where do I put my money if I'm going to invest in pro sports?
Well, I can tell you firsthand, there's a lot of arenas across the country that are in that kind of 8,000 to 10,000 range. It's the same buildings, Tim, that we talk about that are perfectly fit for the PWHL, right? They're perfectly fit for minor league hockey, 8,000 to 10,000. And I know firsthand, there's a lot of those arenas that are looking to fill up additional nights.
So is that, we were talking about, like, where are the unmet needs? Where are the gaps? Is that a gap? Like, arenas of this size, 8,000 to 10,000, are looking for programming?
Yeah, absolutely looking for programming. And, you know, when it comes to things like box lacrosse, right? When it comes to things like now League One indoor volleyball, you know, that's great programming for these buildings. So, no, I think they're filling a great niche. It sounds like they're in some amazing markets. It'll be really interesting to follow this league, you know, as they start to grow. You're probably going to see a TV deal soon. So I think there's definitely a lot of upside for volleyball professionally in this country.
I'm excited, excited to take her up on the offer of going and seeing a Signal game too. So we've had enough of these, John, by the way, where I think we just need to do a skin in the game road trip. We've been invited to go fencing, go ride a bowl in the rodeo, come to nobody. I mean, Chantel did not invite us to go play volleyball for obvious reasons.
I'd rather go to the game, right?
To be her guest at a game. And I could go on here. So, yeah, we've got quite a bit to follow up on. But seriously, it'll be cool to see that league's already been in action, but to see that league in its expanded form in action. And they're all over the country, too. So people out there who are interested, everybody could get there in less than a day's drive to go see some of these games.
Yeah, it was also interesting to get Chantel's perspective on the WNBA. You know, obviously she's a big fan of the league, as we all are. But, you know, I got a sense she's also at the point that, okay, it's time to focus more of the conversation on the players, on the game, on the skill, and maybe backing off. And it might be, Tim, it might be being media driven, but, you know, there's still those players or those press conferences that are offering up those sound bites that unfortunately, you know, are taking more of the headlines than the great things happening on the court.
Yeah, I think, you know, my two cents, it is media driven. That doesn't mean there's not drama. It doesn't mean the media should ignore all of it. I mean, yeah, some of it in the realm of sports and what people and what the athletes are saying, some of it's news. But yeah, I mean, look at any league, look at the NFL. You see drama, you know, spread around the NFL every single week. NBA, same thing. NHL, maybe a little bit less. Baseball,
no, not so much, right?
Yeah, not, yeah. You know, we were saying this a couple of weeks ago. Hockey players are so darn collegial. You know, they're pretty friendly groups. So you just see it a little less. But NBA, though, you know, you see it there too. MLB, you see it at some point. Yeah, I think we got to move on. Call it what it is. Talk about it briefly, and then turn our heads back to the court. Easy for you and me to say, though. That doesn't mean social media is gonna all of a sudden find this stuff to be boring or old or repetitive.
Well, I really want to thank Chantel Preston. Great book, The Success Lie. Great interview. And I think we need to get her back on. Or better yet, you and I go out to San Francisco to catch a signal game.
Little live remote sounds good to me.
Thanks again for listening to Skin of the Game. Until next week.
Skin of the Game is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can catch up with all past episodes on btpm.org or on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.